The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Too many lives have been upended because of our failed approach to marijuana. Criminal records for marijuana possession have led to needless barriers to employment, to housing, to educational opportunities.
And with that, the president moved to clear some 6,500 federal convictions for pot possession, plus thousands more in the District of Columbia, though it won't affect the millions more with state-level convictions.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was big news, and also a campaign promise of the president. One thing you have to say is that the president really is trying to honor a lot of the promises he made on that campaign trail. That was another one of them. The president yesterday issued pardons to people who have been federally charged with simple possession of marijuana. And analysts believe it's the first step he's taking towards legalizing marijuana on the federal level. What do you think? Will marijuana be legal on the federal level? More and more states have decriminalized it. We had, medical marijuana. Is it a gateway drug? And we won't talk about it today, but I've had a lot of experts on who say it isn't. Yet I know personally people who smoke marijuana, and it affects them very differently. I know one person, it's made them completely apathetic and totally unable to, it sapped their ambition. I think they had so much more potential. I know other people who are type A who smoke it, and they treat it like it's a martini, and it just brings them down to a normal level, and they're high functioning and they're fine, in terms of it. So the question is, what will it do to developing brains, especially among young people? What's it do to in terms of opening doors to more serious type of drugs? What will it do? Will good come from it? That's really the big question. I know everybody has their own opinion on that. It's something that we'll be looking at. President, though, leaning towards potentially, I guess giving the green light to that. Federal authorities, Maggie, do we have more audio on the Biden's? That was the piece that we're going to run right on the president there. Yeah, so we do. Maggie, she's got something for me on fentanyl. Let me talk fentanyl for you. Speaking of drugs, then we might as well get into that. Federal authorities say they've seized enough synthetic opioid, right, fentanyl, along the Mexican border to kill. I saw this headline the other day. Every single American. Eight times over. It's stunning, right? They have seized, coming over our very porous, open, unsecure borders, enough fentanyl to kill every single American eight times over. I was actually going to do a whole segment on it today, but I decided to make today's show a little bit more spiritual. It's something I've been following. It's a real concern for me. You talk about, marijuana, that's come over the border, and so is cocaine and a lot of other things. This is serious. The Chinese, of course, they're manufacturing a lot of the fentanyl. They're getting into the hands of the cartel, and the cartels, who knows how much of this stuff is over there? They have these reports of these what they call gotaways at the border, those who've been able to get past authorities. A lot of people come over, they turn themselves in, they want asylum, they want to become Americans. But there's a lot of people who are dressed in camouflaged ghillie suits and have made their way across the border. Fox News was reporting that last year, Custom and Border Patrol agents, they seized, now try to get your head around this, more than 10,000 pounds of this deadly drug. That's 5 tons of fentanyl. This year, they've already seized 12,000 tons. That's six tons, 12,000 pounds of it. And Maggie and I were talking right before the break that the pills that they're sending over, and this is what's so nefarious about it, they come like candy. They're colorful, right? The way the cartel's packaging them, anybody would want to say, hey, I'll try one of those, right? You'll end up dead if you do. I mean, border officials are trying to get all they can, but obviously the pills are slipping through. Let me share with you a little bit more on this. NBC did a report on this. And of course, one of the biggest fentanyl busts in New York that just took place, when they discovered this stuff, they found it looked like kids' Halloween candy. And how tragic that would be, lose your child to something as evil as this. Listen to this. I'll give you a little bit more.
Tonight, the disturbing details about the biggest seizure to date in New York of a deadly and deceptive drug. 15,000 brightly colored fentanyl pills, known as rainbow fentanyl, found hidden in a Lego box, a children's toy. The colorful drug that looks like candy is what DEA agents call every parent's worst nightmare.
This is calculated. This is treacherous deception to market rainbow fentanyl like candy.
The bust, part of an ongoing DEA operation called One Pill Can Kill, because just 2 milligrams of fentanyl can be deadly. Officials say during a recent 4-month period, more than 36 million lethal doses have been removed from the nation's illegal drug supply. The 15,000 pills seized in New York, investigators say, is the largest in New York to date.
This seizure that you see here today of rainbow fentanyl, this is just the tip of the iceberg.
Agents charged a 48-year-old woman from New Jersey, Letitia Bush, with transporting the drugs discovered in the backseat of a car. Bush was arraigned in Manhattan criminal court on Friday with bail set at $25,000 cash. But investigators traced the drugs to cartels in Mexico, which investigators say use colors and dyes to mimic candy or legitimate prescription drugs with materials they get from China.
Mexican cartels don't care if drug users live or die, as long as they can continue to expand their market and make money.
The DEA says the packages of bite-sized and multicolored pills seized in New York are the equivalent of some 500,000 lethal doses, and that fentanyl is involved in some 80% of overdose deaths in the city.
Yeah, I mean, it's tragic. Be on the lookout. Halloween is right around the corner. Do yourself a favor. Don't do drugs either. If you're looking for Oxy or some ecstasy or something else, this stuff is, can be packaged in it. So, and pray. This is another attack on the family. This is truly evil. And Satan hates the family. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. This is all part of a spiritual attack, I think, on the family. You know, and speaking of drugs and a lot of other things, I you know, say a prayer for Hunter Biden too. My gosh, you know, I saw a picture of him today on the news earlier today, and I said to my wife, because she was watching, I was having a cup of coffee this morning, I was watching the news, and I said, I actually feel bad the way, you know, somebody who's drug addicted is portrayed. I mean, you might have a loved one in your family that's dealing with drugs, but clearly Hunter Biden thinks he's entitled, thinks he can get away with a lot of this. Federal authorities say they have enough evidence right now to bring charges against him, both for tax crimes and for false statements about a gun. The U.S. attorney in Delaware is waiting while discussions are taking place right now with defense attorneys. But the Washington Post reported that this investigation into Biden, it's been going on, and it's been taking place right now, I think, for 4 years. It started about 4 years ago. They began looking into his finances, to overseas business ties and consulting work, namely his ties with communist China and an energy company in Ukraine. And Attorney General Merrick Garland says, I'm going to keep myself out of this, out of the investigation. And he just, you know, the decision about bringing charges. You got to wonder if that's really the case. There's different strategies about it. I think it was tragic that this story was muted during the elections when you have the son of a man who may become president, ultimately did, and is going to be dealing with, have relationships with these very nations. And you wonder if this would be compromising to him at all, and you know, very well may be. So we'll see what happens. Some have the theory that they are going to press charges against Hunter Biden right now. And they think, hey, we can do this to say, hey, we are unbiased, you know, and we are unpartisan, and we are pressing charges against him, so then they can come against former President Trump. So we'll see. Just food for thought. Speaking of the president, he was at a fundraising party the other day, and he was telling people at this particular event that we are now closest to a nuclear apocalypse than we have been since the Cuban Missile Crisis back in 62. Of course, Vladimir Putin has been saber-rattling, right? But we have to take him serious. I mean, a desperate man will do desperate things. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, he's calling on NATO to carry out, and I think this is a bad idea, some kind of preemptive action against Russia before they use nuclear weapons. He wants them to do a preemptive strike. The Washington Examiner reported that Zelensky said in Australia that these actions are needed so that Russians know what waits them if they use nuclear weapons, not the other way around, waiting for Russia to do a nuclear strike and then saying, you know, you've done that, now get this. Our officials, of course, have spoken to the Putin administration and him. I think they've made very clear what the consequences of this type of action are. So spokesman clarified Zelensky was not calling for a preemptive nuclear strike later, but that was the word that initially got out. He just wants, just action. That warns, of course, Russia what could happen. And one other story, Ambassador Sam Brownback is going to be joining me in a second here. But before I jump over to him, let me just share one quick story because I want to talk religious liberty. This is all part of the battle, too. I've been following stories recently about attacks on churches, right? There was another one that happened on Wednesday, and I keep giving you this litany of reports because I just want to, I want you to be in the know. I want you to understand the gravity of what is now happening. This time, a man tried to throw a Molotov cocktail in the Cathedral of Holy Family in Tulsa, Oklahoma. He was stopped by a cathedral employee, but the attacker also used a sword and used it against the employee, who actually got injured. He sustained a pretty serious cut to the hand, and police later arrested the man at a convenience store several miles away where he was also making threats. The bishop there he believes that this was a case of a mentally unstable man rather than somebody deliberately attacking the church, and I'm sure that is probably the case. I think a lot of people who do this are not in their right mind, but there is also those who have real animus towards the church and towards anybody who supports life as well. You've heard about religious attacks taking place. We've talked also about what's happening internationally in China and Nigeria. Those attacks are easy to see. The genocide being carried out on the Uyghur population, we've talked about with great intensity. We've had many. We had the former prime minister of Turkestan on, and Congressman Chris Smith, amongst others. The Uyghur population is primarily Muslim, and in China, there's been constant attacks on them and on Christian populations as well. Christians in Nigeria, there's been attacks on Christians that have gone unpunished by the government, and they're easy to see, and people are suffering really with just tremendous, tremendous hardship because of this. But there are also attacks taking place right now in the West. The Catholic Herald was reporting that this past Sunday in Surrey, England, police officers arrested a 48-year-old Catholic mother. She's a mother of five. They cuffed her right in front of her children for allegedly posting malicious online messages about gender issues. That was the crime. Here in the U.S., one of the biggest Supreme Court cases in this term is a case known as 303 Creative LLC versus Elenis, where Lori Smith wants the court to say that she cannot be compelled by the state of Colorado to provide her website graphic design service to the same-sex couples who want to get married. So they come after, cake makers and photographers. Now they're coming after web designers. And the gay lobby is up in arms over this case because they think it's an attack on them. And they're conveniently forgetting what happened 10 years ago with Jack Phillips. Remember that? In Colorado, he was, that was a case that went all the way up. But, what's really going on is that Christians are asking the court, look, we want you just to protect our right to freely practice our religion. That's all. We want to be able to, we don't want to be commiserate. We don't want to be involved in these gay weddings. And some of these cases, I think, are very deliberate. They target Christian florists and cake makers and, photographers and web designers for a specific reason. So religious liberty, as we know, is the first of the liberties listed in our Bill of Rights. And I have told you before, after the Obergefell decision, I think this is going to come under increasing attack, and we're seeing it. Religious liberty today is under attack. The first of your liberties in the Bill of Rights, and there's a reason for it. If you do not have freedom of religion, then the state can easily set itself up as a god, if you will. Recognizing the fundamental freedom of religion means the state is a secondary objective, not a primary one. And Ambassador Sam Brownback, who has served as Secretary of Agriculture in Kansas, a representative for the 2nd Congressional District for that state, also made a presidential run as well. I wish he had greater success in that. We need well-formed men in that position. He was a senator, then the 46th governor, and of course, right now he was a U.S. ambassador at large for international religious freedom from, I think it was 2018 to 2021. I asked him to stop by and join us today to give us a perspective on where we are you know, what we're seeing in this country and where it's ultimately heading. And Ambassador, thank you for all you've done on so many different levels of the government and what you've done, especially on the front of religious liberty. I'm grateful to have you here today.
Well, it's a pleasure to join you in discussion and how you've laid out the issue. You've laid it out very, very well. Religious liberty is under attack. Religious freedom's under attack in this country. And we're the country that first started practicing it. A nation wouldn't have formed, in my estimation, first 13 colonies would not have become a nation had it not been for religious freedom, because you had Catholics in one area and you had Quakers and Baptists and Jews, and they had come from a continent where you killed people if they disagreed with you on faith, or you certainly locked them up. Yeah. And here they said, okay, we aren't going to do that. We're not going to have an official religion of the state, and you can freely exercise your faith. As long as you exercise it peacefully, you can freely exercise it, period. And that was the glue that allowed these 13 disparate colonies to come together. And now we're really stepping on this original piece that allowed us to pull together. And the real thing that allows this diverse, eclectic collection of people that we have as a country to stay together freely and peacefully.
Yeah, I am concerned about where we are heading right now. It's not just us either, is it, Ambassador? You know, I know there are dangers facing Christians all around the world. What are we looking at globally here? And why is it on the rise today? Or maybe it's not. Maybe I just have a greater awareness of it. What do you see happening?
You have the greatest Christian persecution, the most Christians being killed for their faith now, any time in the history of Christendom.
Stunning.
Taking place now. And it's disparate, and it's in different places. Nigeria, you know, it's a lot of times it's radical Muslims attacking Christians. In North Korea, it's just the state killing anybody that really doesn't toe the line. And China is my biggest concern, because they've got a global effort to have global dominance. And their dominance is built upon religion being wiped out, because religion is the only entity that has enough adherence and enough pull to it, that people have enough belief in it to stand up to a government. It's the only institution out there that has that. And China, as a communist country, atheistic country, can't have anything higher than the state for allegiance to it. And so they are at war with all faiths. Muslims are most apparent, but Christians are being put down, and it's very deliberate, and it's a global effort to be able to put religion down so that the state can be dominant.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Here in the U.S., you know, we've always had this belief that we can, you know, not just worship, but we can live out our religious beliefs in everyday life, you know, freely. That belief, though, I think, is now running headlong onto opposition from certain quarters. You know, what is up with that as well? What can we do maybe to push back? Is the battle going to intensify? We see this repeated attack, too. I was pointing out kind of the florist, the baker, the photographer, now the web designer. It seems almost unrelenting.
Yeah, I think it's just going to continue, and I think we've just got to fight back, and we've got to fight back at the grassroots level, in my estimation. That's why we formed up this National Committee for Religious Freedom. It's modeled after the National Right to Life movement.
Great.
And we're going to have state chapters throughout the country. We'll have Kansans for Religious Freedom, Virginians for Religious Freedom, New Yorkers for Religious Freedom, to fight in their state at the local, state, and federal election level for religious freedom causes, to elect school board members, to elect people to the state legislature, because we need people in these governmental bodies to push back. We need them in decision-making positions to push back and to ask, you know, basic questions. Do we really need to teach a gender ideology?
Right.
Here at all, that alone, when you're 6, 7, 8 years old. And I think if we can, my experience has been that if you can get somebody in the positions, one person that just starts asking questions and starts pushing back carefully, clearly, it can really help turn the tide on these places. But we've got to get organized, and we've got to get active, and we can't just assume that this is going to be there and continue for us.
I think it's a great idea. I want to congratulate you on it. And I hope this radio network here reaches about 250 million households across the country. We're heard from New York to L.A., from Dallas to the Twin Cities and states everywhere in between. So there are a lot of people that are listening. And I love the idea that we have these states for religious freedom. And I agree with you. I think we need educators. We need decision makers. We need those in the media and entertainment industry to be well-formed and to see the dangers towards religious freedom. How can people get connected? What's the best way to help? And, what would you suggest in terms of getting them involved?
Go to the website. It's the NCRF, the NCRF, National Committee for Religious Freedom, but it's just thencrf.org. Go on that website. You can take and put in the pledge yourself. We're asking candidates to take these pledges, and we'll be announcing our candidates that we're supporting federally here this next week. And then you can also contact us through that webpage and say you want to help start the chapter in your state. Get things stood up there. We've got a couple of states that we're already starting to work in that have been good: Oklahoma, Arizona, Ohio. I just want to really make this point very clear. We have to win this at the grassroots level. Amen. We will lose it at the corporate boardroom level. We will lose it if we just focus on Washington. We need to win it in our local communities and be very active and organized there. That's where we win this thing, because the people are with us. It's often the elites are the ones that we're fighting against.
Yeah, well, you see the power of what happened in Virginia with Youngkin, and what grassroots efforts can do to bring about change. And I could not agree with you more. The website is ncfr.org. Go and check it out and do your part. There's a lot to talk about, everything from the Supreme Court to a lot of other threats that are happening. But what's your take, too? I know you ran for president. We've got midterms coming up. We're going to have the generals here before you know it. What's your sense of where we are right now? It seems we've become more partisan, more polarized than we ever have before. And, we've gone from all these gender, CRT and, this gender fluidity stuff. I mean, things are just getting so crazy right now. And it seems that political parties have separated even more. What's your sense of where we are, Ambassador? And how do you think things are going to shake out in about a month in these midterms?
It looks like the Republicans are going to take the House back and have a real good chance of taking the Senate. But it looks like they're going to get the House back this election cycle, and that'll start to put a brake on some things. But you really have this dichotomy between the two parties of really these untried social kind of structures. Yep. Where you're talking about, no, we're not two genders, it's 50 right. genders. Right. This has never been tried in the history of humanity. And now being pushed on people, and you're going, well, wait a minute, where are we headed with this? And what's the purpose? And why are we doing this? And so you really have been a lot of people pushing back saying, I can't believe that what you're talking about here. And that's what it seems like really is taking place, that we're really fighting about just fundamental basic things. And if you're a person of faith, it's really about, well, is there really a God, and did he have an idea of how we should live or not? And it, you're getting the real basic points of differences of view that are dividing people in the political spectrum.
You're not kidding. Plus, this policy, all these policies that we see right now, I mean, I've never seen the country in such a bad position as we are right now. It's just it's frightening on a lot of levels. I hope people will get out and vote. I hope they'll vote with a well-formed conscience and understand what's at risk. And it's not just, economics. There's a lot, religious liberty and so many other issues.
There is. But I want to sound, a very positive note, too. The Dobbs case in overturning Roe versus Wade was a 50-year effort to overturn a radically wrong and illegally unsupported bad law. Yep. And it happened. And it happened this year. And now we have an actual live political debate about the issue of abortion, which we didn't have. That's an amazing accomplishment in the political system. We can win these fights. But that fight was won at the grassroots level. It was Knights of Columbus and Catholic Church people and folks saying, look, this is wrong. You can't kill a baby in the womb. You can't kill it when it's outside the womb. You can't kill it in the womb. And they stood up and they fought and we won it. Now we've got to go through the political process, which is very, very important. But we didn't even have a fight before. Yep. And so these are winnable, but they take grassroots organization and they take longevity.
No, I could not agree with you more. Hey, thank you for what you've done over the decades there. What's up for you next? Are you thinking about running for office again? Or are you out?
No, I'm not out. I'm involved. I'm helping getting this National Committee for Religious Freedom going because I just think this is so fundamental to us. And I'm working a lot against China. I'm working on a book, China's War on Faith, because they've got a global aspiration. And we cannot let this win. Their global aspiration puts religion under the thumb of the government. And wherever they are, this is what they push. So I'm writing this book on China's war on faith because I just think we got to sound the alarm and recognize these guys are coming. And they're not just coming. They are out there, and we've got to confront them.
Yeah, no kid. I have the same concern. When your book is out, let me know. We'd love to have you on to dive into it and unpack it. Thank you, Ambassador, for your time. Thank you for all that you do. Keep up your good work, okay?
Thank you. Appreciate it. God bless you all.
God bless you. That's Ambassador Sam Brownback. Say a prayer for him, for his family, and for the efforts that he is involved in. They're on the front lines of religious liberty. And keep an eye out for his book, China's War on Faith. I've got to take a short pause. Stay with me. Peter Atkinson joins me on the other side. Don't go away.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This hour sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your life connected.
Hey, it's good to be with you today. I am live. We're going to pray the chaplet together coming up in about 30 minutes. So if you have a need or you just want some extra prayer, you want to share it with the prayer family here, why not do that? A lot of souls join us every afternoon for this prayer, and we'll just storm heaven's gate, all right? We'll storm the throne of God with our prayers. Do that in about a half an hour. Do somebody else a favor, too. I think a great way to spread devotion to divine mercy is just by inviting others to pray with you. You know, it's the Lord said, anybody who spreads devotion to his mercy, he would protect like a mother, her tender infant, and that they would shine with a special brilliance in the next life. So tell one other person, send them a tweet, send them a text. Go ahead and get them plugged in to the Chapel of Divine Mercy. That's coming up. Yeah, we've been talking a lot lately about companies like Disney and Netflix and Sony and their ilk, and people are spending money hand over fist to see these actors play, you know, these stories out, and the companies know the power they have, and they wield it pretty good, pretty freely. Amazon started out as a guy selling books in his garage, right? Now, look at Jeff Bezos today, right? He's sending people to the stars. It's crazy how much money this guy has. He's one of the richest people in the world. And his company has this mono, you know, it's kind of this tendency for being monopolistic, and that includes entertainment. It was announced that that Amazon would be doing a series of books based on J.R.R. Tolkien, and he wrote the, you know, that give the backstory of The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings, and not many people had much trust that it would be able to pull it off. But after spending about $1 billion, not a million, but $1 billion. $1 billion with a B. The criticism has been abundant. In fact, Amazon, they had to turn off the comment section of their website because the vast majority of these comments that had come in were bad. They were all negative. People accusing Amazon of filling, you know, Tolkien's tales with this woke ideology, especially with racism. I'm joined today by somebody who's been giving us a look at what's happening in the world of entertainment, what is been taking place really with wokeism on so many different levels, whether it's Disney or Amazon or in the movie theaters or coming to your home screen. And that's Peter Atkinson. He is the director of the Mary Baggers here at Relevant Radio. It's part of our media division. And he's doing some wonderful work here. We've talked about it in the past. He's now on his fourth episode of The Night Train. We're going to talk about that. It's coming out on Sunday. I just checked out a web link he showed me, too. There's some really cool stuff that we want to share with you coming up. But I thought I'd get up to speed with him right now a little bit on what's happening in the culture. And, Peter, let's start with Amazon. I'm going to talk about bros. I'm going to talk about some other stuff that's happening in the media as well. But Amazon spent $1 billion on the production of Rings of Power. And, of course, Tolkien's work is a masterpiece, right? How could they have spent so much money and yet there is a storm of criticism? I mean, storm is probably an understatement.
Yeah, no, it's good to be on, Drew, with you. It's an honor. Well, it's interesting. So they spent $1 billion on the production. That's sort of the number that people are throwing around. But they only spent $500 million on production. Another $250 million were for the rights to even produce this story from the Tolkien estate. And then another $250 million were spent on marketing, which is a really interesting number, because I think one of the threads that ties together the Bros movie and Amazon and a story I saw this week on TikTok is it is really hard to get an audience these days. There are so many streaming services battling each other. You know, I'm sure your listeners are subscribed to, you know, Netflix, HBO, Disney, you know, whatever, right? And so it's harder and harder to build an audience. And they had to spend $250 million to market this show to an audience when Amazon is one of the most popular websites on the internet, and they still had to spend that money. They've got good numbers so far. They said they got 25 million people to tune in the first episode. Now, you don't know whether that's 25 million viewing the first 5 minutes and then piecing out.
Right.
I watched the first two, three episodes and then honestly just sort of got bored. It doesn't have the same resonance that Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings adaptation does. It doesn't. It seems a lot more vapid than Peter Jackson. One of the things that really threw me for a loop was they have these Hobbit characters, and so your listeners understand, in J.R.R. Tolkien's sort of mythology, and I'm sure people listening know more about this than I do, but in the mythology there are sort of three ages to Middle Earth, and the Lord of the Rings movies that we all know and love, The Hobbit and the trilogy, cover the third age of Middle Earth. And the first age is you know, that's covered in the Silmarillion, that's covered in other works like that. And then the second age doesn't really have any books that Tolkien wrote about it.
Right.
Now, Amazon didn't get the rights to that. They just got the rights to Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, which obviously they can't make that. That's already been produced. And so they're trying to tell the story about the second age. And they're making a lot of it up, sort of off the hip. And the problem is the writing is not nearly as good. You know, there's this this race of men in there that say, you know, this sort of cheesy line about the sea. And as soon as they do that, you realize, like, this is no Peter Jackson. This is no... those movies were made at a really, really unique time in American history and American cultural history. The woke ideology hadn't sort of risen to the front. There wasn't this sort of idea that every movie we make has to address every sort of social ill in American culture. You can just try and make a really beautiful movie. And one of the first controversies that happened around the Amazon series was I'm an actor, and so I've sort of been keyed into these casting notices that happen before a movie comes out. And there is a casting notice that happened about a year before this was released that said actors who are performing in Lord of the Rings need to be comfortable with nudity, need to be comfortable with nude scenes, need to be comfortable with so on and so forth. And then the production started hiring what are called in the industry, quote unquote, intimacy directors, which means how to make you feel comfortable exploiting yourself on screen. And those were sort of early signs that this is not a Peter Jackson production. Now, there was a huge backlash. That, you know, they were worried they were going to try and do Game of Thrones treatment. Now, Game of Thrones had millions and millions of people tuning in every season. It was sort of this massive blockbuster. And Amazon's producers – had an eye towards that when they started making this. So they threw the kitchen sink at this, $1 billion of production money. Wow. And the reviews have been mixed, very, very mixed.
That's wild. So they weren't true to Tolkien's books then, right? It took a lot of liberty. And
that's
always a
problem. Well, there was nothing to be true to.
Right, they're creating a fictional piece prior to. What, was it written in the same voice or same tone or not really?
I think they try to, Peter Jackson's trilogy was so incredible. And then The Hobbits didn't hit the same mark. Right. And part of that was that The Hobbit's tone was a lot more childish, a lot more silly. It didn't have the same gravitas that, Return of the King has.
Yeah.
And so I think with this series, that what I've gotten is they really are trying to hit that same tone, but the writing just isn't there. It's just not at the same quality.
Peter, you and I were... We were talking one day, and you were sharing a little bit of your own backstory. You're talking about intimacy directors.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Right? And
that's right.
when you were in school, right?
Yeah.
You want to share that story?
We'll
just talk about how liberal, some of these institutions are right now and what they are now. And we talk about wokeism. We talk about this agenda that they're pushing on people. I mean, we could talk about Bros and why he did so poorly at the box office as well. But there's a certain mindset, both in Hollywood, but also I think in a lot of these institutions where, you're learning your craft as well and you're being educated. Share your story. It's a stunning one.
Well, so for those who don't know, in when you're becoming an actor, you go through lots of training institutions. I went to London and trained at the Royal at Lambda Shakespeare Institution, and then I trained in Massachusetts. And in Massachusetts, the head of training was an ex-Jesuit priest. He had left the priesthood, and he was an avowed Marxist who ranted to us in the classroom about how religion was the cause of all evil, so on and so forth. And it was, shocking. You sort of hear those stories, but you sort of think they're exaggerated. But in the acting world, I mean, let me tell you, they push it as far as you can go. So I was at Columbia University, got incredible training, but everyone there was as left as you could be. Like, there's a trope in New York that everyone in the acting industry is an ex-Catholic. because if you're Catholic, you don't stay long. And part of the graduation requirements was we had to perform in a thesis. And the thesis at this time was about how New Yorkers dealt with 9/11. And for some reason, this involved gay nudity on stage. I'm not sure why, but this was the story. Wow. And that also is a lot of New York theater. It sort of tries to be edgier than contemporary culture constantly. And a lot of the plays end up being propaganda. So eventually, I had to go to the dean of students and say, I will not graduate if you make me be in this show. Because, of course, as a Catholic, I couldn't do that, right?
Good for you.
You either have to sort of,
It took a lot of fortitude.
I knew my back was against the wall, and it was just push comes to shove. Yeah. I don't want to die on my grave knowing it was that off-Broadway credit was worth it. Absolutely not.
I agree with you.
And so eventually push came to shove. She pushed back and I said, all right, well, I'm just not going to graduate. And eventually they relented and I ended up performing in a Chekhov play. But this is also why so many of the main studios and industry heads in Hollywood are sort of uniformly anti-Catholic, anti-Christian, anti-Judeo-Christian moral values is because there's a weeding out process. If you're not willing to do that project, if you're not willing to be in that TV show, if you're not willing to be in that commercial, then you can't pay the bills. And so you can't stay in the industry. And so 10 years down into the industry, the people you have left are the people who, are a piece of that culture.
It's crazy, and it doesn't seem like things are changing, does it?
Well, there's little glimpses of hope. There's a great podcast, Saints Alive, which does audio stories about the saints. Yeah. We have the Mary Beggars here.
Yeah.
We have Angel
Amen.
Studios. So the internet pre-1990s, there was no way to really pierce the mainstream media's control of the narrative. Then the internet came along and blogging came along, and suddenly you started seeing individual bloggers being able to take down mainstream news outlets. And I think currently we're seeing a version of that with entertainment. Now, it's harder because it's much harder to produce a movie than it is to write a hit piece or write an article. So it requires more capital. It requires more organization. But I think we're starting to see a similar trend happen where companies like Daily Wire, Angel Studios, Dry Bar Comedy, they're starting to create productions that audiences want to see, building that relationship with audiences, and then you have loyalty.
And that's what I love about Relevant Radio, partnering up now with the Merry Beggars.
Absolutely.
And producing incredible content. And it costs money.
It does.
And it takes professionals to do this. So, you know, this is not some shabby little get a bunch of people together on the weekend and let's record in our garage. I mean, this is high-end, well-produced, and well-written, programming. And we'll talk about it when we come back. I know we're on the fourth episode of The Night Train. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the website, how people can go to that as well. We got a lot to share. If you want to join us, you can dial in. The number here is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Speaking to Peter Atkinson, the director of the Merry Beggars here at Relevant Radio, giving you kind of a cultural look at what's happening in the country. Gosh, I didn't even get into half of what I want to talk to you about. Velma is being depicted as a lesbian from Scooby-Doo. The Bros, there's so much. But I want to talk really about what you're doing. We'll leave people on a good note. Feel free to join us. As I said, we'll be back with more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show.
Connected.
Connected.
Relevant Radio.
You know, we receive over a million prayer requests every year, thanks in part to the Catholic Order of Foresters Studio Line, helping us stay connected to your intentions. Learn how our sponsor can support your family with life insurance at relevantradio.com/Forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We are live for The Chaplet coming up in about 10 minutes. Love to pray with you. Feel free to join me. I am going to be traveling next week. John Harper, I think Cale Clark might even sit in for a day. And Kevin Turley, we got some other people that might be taking the reins for a little bit. But I'm going to be praying overseas. I'll try to maybe even call in to the show as I'm taking your prayer intentions with me. But we'll pray together coming up here in just a moment. So feel free to join me right now if you are tuned in. I don't know if you've caught the night train yet. Peter Atkinson joins me. He's the director of the Merry Beggars. He's here early. He leaves late. He's been working on this nonstop, and it is excellent. It's climbing in the rankings on Apple. We talked about that last time he was by here, and of course, you can check it on all sorts of different venues, but I keep plugging Apple because I want to see you get to number one. He was in the tree. Tell us a little bit about where you are right now. We're talking about, of course, Tolkien. We're talking about what Amazon's doing. And there's a lot of other stuff coming out. The depiction of Velma as a lesbian, the director of Bros upset because it didn't do well, and he's got people he's blaming for that. We got new resources. We got alternatives to this garbage. And the Night Train, I think, is one of those. So, Phil, for those who don't know, a little bit about what you're all about, and then where we are and what they're going to find.
Yeah, so On the Night Train is the current production of The Merry Beggars, and it follows two young Irish Catholic kids in the 1880s, Paul and Edith Mallard, as they race across America aboard the Night Train. And the Night Train is in a race across America with the Midnight Express to see who can be the first passenger train across America to Sacramento, California. And when mysterious accidents start happening to the Night Train, it's up to Edith and Paul to solve the mystery and save the train. That's the elevator pitch for this series. So it's this sort of high adventure series, audio series that we've been producing. We spent a year and a half writing it. The script was 1,500 pages long. We pulled in 30 actors from around the country, recorded for 6 weeks, 10 hours a day. And now we're finally able to release it. And it's been so cool to see how the audience has been receiving it. You can go to onthenighttrain.com or search up On the Night Train on Apple, Spotify. If you have the Relevant Radio app, then it's also available in app as well. Episode one started with a tour of the Night Train and a mysterious explosion. Episode two, Edith and Paul end up, hearing and meeting Mr. Pullman and suddenly ending up on the Night Train. And there's I don't want to give any spoiler alerts, but we have teachers using this in classrooms. We have kids listening to this every night with their parents. And it's been really beautiful to just see, you know, we spent a while creating a rich, beautiful world that people could lose themselves in. There's over 40 characters in the series. And so it's been so cool to see kids just become like engaged with the series. My niece, who lives back in Maryland, she was talking to my dad, and they just had, you know, they talked for an hour about the series.
That's
and who they think is, you know, causing the sabotage and about the various characters. So
they ask you for the spoiler?
I'm not giving any spoilers.
Even to your niece?
No, not especially not to my niece.
Yeah, it's so funny because, you know, when I grew up, I mean, radio theater was not a thing anymore. It was done. Yeah. But I remember one time there was like a radio in my room. And I had turned it on, and I remember finding some station where they were doing this radio theater. It was some suspense. It was a drama. It was vampire or a spy. I don't know what it was, you know. But I remember listening to it and getting engaged in it and then thinking, oh, the next night I want to listen to that. And you and I were having this conversation a little bit earlier today. I mean, that's the beauty of this. I mean, if you start to listen, you're all in because it is both entertaining and it's fun. It's theater of the mind. And it's a great thing to do both as a family and individually. Whether you're driving or walking or going to bed at night, kids can listen to it. It's awesome. So we're finding – how long does it take? One episode, two episodes? What are you finding for people to get connected?
I think we found about once people listen to two episodes, maybe three, they're in it for the entire series. My favorite emails and messages are from people impatiently asking, you know, why can't these come out every day? You know, why do I have to wait a week? One of them was from a parent saying that their child was having to experience entertainment the way they had to experience entertainment when they were a kid. You have to wait a week between episodes.
That's so true. So, you know, just for those who are saying, well, when's it come out? It is 6 p.m. Central. Every
on
Sunday
Sundays,
night.
Yes.
6 p.m. Central, Sunday night, 7 Eastern. And of course, I guess it's what, 4 o'clock?
4 p.m. Pacific, yeah.
So check it out, okay? Mark your calendar, make sure you join it. Somebody just sent us a message. And look, if you want to share, maybe you've listened to it. I only have a couple of minutes left with Peter, but if you want to get in, I'd love to hear your reaction. Have you checked out On the Night Train? If you have, give them some feedback. The number here is, it could be good or bad. We're honest here. We're open. 888-914-9149. But you have to call now in order to get in. We only have a couple of minutes. 888-914-9149. Question off here for you. Somebody just sent to me. What exactly is a Merry Beggar?
So the name, the Merry Beggars, what it came from was from my what it came to me was a result of my experience of being an actor in New York City. So what a Merry Beggar is someone who works for the Merry Beggars at Relevant Radio. But what the name means, which is I think what they were asking, is it's my idea of what the attitude of a Christian or a Catholic artist is supposed to have. Yeah. You know, we're beggars before Christ. All of us are in need of God's infinite mercy. And no matter how many material possessions or how much reputation we gather, ultimately our value comes from begging before Christ for his love. Like we are in need. We are impoverished. Without his grace, we are in total poverty. And it's acceptance of that poverty and surrender to God that allows us to be in relationship, in friendship with God. So that's, first of all, just we have to beg before reality, as Luigi Giussani would say. And then the Mary is, you can't be a glum face. You have to be joyful, right? We live in grace. So and the point of being a Christian is to say, we're on pilgrimage while we're here. This is not our home. You are going to die one day, and that is good news because you are not meant for this earth. Amen. And so the attitude is really the attitude of a pilgrim. Being joyful on your journey home, which is ultimately heaven.
That's very beautifully said. I love that. One other thing, you showed me a website. I want to make sure people are aware of this as well, which is pretty cool. And I know your niece, was it your niece?
It was my niece.
Fill everyone in. It's another thing you can check out. We'll put a link up at Twitter, at Drew Mariani Show. So follow us there, at Drew Mariani Show. You can follow me personally, at Drew Mariani. Love to see you there. I'm going to try to be better on my social media in the days ahead. I'm going to be in Israel. I'm going to try to post pictures and prayers and petitions and a bunch of stuff there. But Maggie will get it up on our Twitter and our Facebook. So real quick, I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, so the website is just onthenighttrain.com. And we released a whole new version of it, which we've been working on for months. On the Night Train is a big story. There are, you know, like 7 train cars, 40 characters. They travel the United States. It's a lot to keep track of.
Okay.
And because we're audio, you don't have the visual of people's faces. And so we've been working for months with artists in Canada and down in Florida to create a website where you can see portraits of each of the characters. We've recorded all the characters saying hello to you and introducing themselves to you so that kids can, you know, say hello to Mrs. Hines and to George Crocker and Maddie and so on and so forth. And they can follow a map of the journey where they can see each episode where the night train is in the country. And they can even go inside the train cars and see, you know, how big is Rosie's kitchen, how are the roommates set up, and it's all accurate to an 1880s train. So
who came up with the names of the characters?
Oh, that was back and forth between me and the playwright.
I love the names. That was pretty cool.
Henry Hines and Mrs. Hines is a pretty obvious joke, and it was too easy to pass up.
I know. Some inside humor there. All right, let's grab a real quick call. I don't have time to get any of these in. Gary's in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Gary, you're on the air with Peter. Go ahead.
Thank you. Hey, Peter. My family really enjoys it. My oldest son is 9, and I have my 4 oldest children are listening to it. They really like it, and it's a fun family activity.
That's fantastic, and that's exactly what we want to happen. You know, one of the things that I love about audio is that it doesn't have to be passive. You know, we were talking about Lord of the Rings before. You sit in front of your computer, you sit back, and you're sort of zoned out. With this, families around the country can actually connect with each other through this. So that's awesome, Gary. I hope you listen the whole series.
All right, 6 p.m. Central Time. Relevant Radio on Sundays. Check out On the Night Train. Of course, go to the website. It's on the night. It's nighttrain.com.
On the night train.com.
We'll check it out. Peter will be back again with me soon. It's always good to talk with him. Peter, thanks.
Thanks.
Good seeing you. The Chaplet straight ahead. Let's pray.